Yeah. Referred work, we have no way, practical way, of determining the market cap of the referred work, because that's not a complete audit, that's part of an audit. But that doesn't mean we're not conducting inspections that are going to be directed at evaluating the referred work, because we are. That's a priority, particularly a priority for this year, and we're exploring a number of ways of determining the risks with respect to particular work, referred work at particular non-U.S. Inspection sites, and we're working with ORR in connection with that, and also we're getting information from the accounting firms, sometimes the domestic accounting firms, with respect to the referral work they refer to the non-U.S. jurisdictions. And in anticipation of foreign inspections, we're getting work and requesting it ahead of the inspections that relates to the referral work as well. And this year we'll see how it all works out, but it's not a case where we're not doing it. It's not a case where that's not a priority.
Well, I do think it's important, and I'm glad we're you know, trying to build up more information about the referred work so we can take it into account. I know you said it's hard to determine, or we don't initially have the information. Do you have a ballpark sense of whether it would change the order in which we looked at these 49 firms? Does the referred work tend to follow the market capitalization of the signing work, or no correlation there?
The problem is that if you have you could have a multinational domestic firm that's has subsidiaries all over the world that are audited by different jurisdictions, and in some instances that referred work may be nothing or not much, and in others it may be extremely significant. It may involve a wholly owned subsidiary that's substantive to the business of the multinational. At present, we do not have a handle on all the risks that relate to referred work. One of the problems is to how do you get an overview of the risks of that work conducted internationally. And we're going to try to do it through getting information from the firms largely, but also we're working with the other divisions here.
Well, again, I may be going another step down that path. I said in my statement that I thought one of the silver linings of the deferral was that it did give us a bit of an opportunity to kind of sharpen and make more sophisticated our risk assessment and other things related to inspection planning for foreign inspections. Since I said it, I hope it's accurate. I mean, can you expand a little on what we're doing in that regard?
Well, we're improving the processes in the inspection division relating particularly to planning and particularly as they relate to the risk process. We brought the inspection personnel in from the field to enable us to better evaluate and enhance the planning process and the risk evaluation process, but also we brought them in as to give us a better handle on oversight of both the field inspectors and also more oversight into their reporting process. So we're working with ORR in trying to develop better methods of evaluating risk, particularly things that relate to cultural differences from area to area. And we're working with OIA, as we have always done, in enabling it from getting information with respect to getting into those particular countries is really helpful to us also from the inspection process in determining our scheduling.
Well, it does seem to me that when we went into all this several years ago, we kind of took the attitude that the risks of audit failure outside the United States could be analyzed in about the same way that they were domestically. And you know, as you're suggesting, I think we've learned now that you have to look at the cultural differences, variety of other things. So I'm
much more
glad we're going down that road. Let me just turn to the transparency part of what we're doing. I mean, you discussed, Rhonda, the list that we're going to release of the names of the firms that haven't had their first inspection within the framework of the schedule in our rules, basically within 3 years after the year in which the firm is first registered. Can you expand any on the mechanics of how that list is going to work? And when will
firm's name go on the list, one would come off the list, and a lot of things happen in the course of an inspection, notifying the firm it's going to be inspected, requesting documents, starting the field work, ending the field work, sending a draft report, sending a final report. So what, when will a firm be on and off that list?
Well, because the inspection deadlines are set by calendar year here at the PCAOB, so a firm would go on that list if by the end of the prior calendar year the inspection field work for that firm had not been conducted, and that prior calendar year was the original four-year deadline. So they would go on the list if the inspection field work had not been conducted, and then when the list is updated, if the inspection field work has been conducted by that time, the firm would come off the list.
So the, I guess you're saying that the triggering event to go off the list would be completion of the field work in the inspection?
That's what we had envisioned.
You know, I think that makes sense, but maybe sometimes it's hard to define the completion of the field work, because you may think you're done and then identify a need to go back in and do field work again. I mean, because, you know, that's
true. There is an element of judgment in that.
And then, just give me again the earlier part of your answer. Will we be updating this list during the year, or this list will be annual? So if you're on it January 1st, field work is completed January 15th, you won't come off until next year?
Well, we had actually envisioned that the list would be updated in January and July, so that if the field work was completed in the first 6 months of the year, then the firm would come off that list when it was updated in July.
And then release has some language in it, and I think you quoted it or paraphrased it in your statement, Rhonda, about that basically we're not going to try and offer the reasons why a firm is on the list, because we're not in a position to know what the firm's circumstances is and are in all cases. And then it says, given the possibility of disciplinary proceedings to determine whether a particular firm's conduct violates the Act or the PCAOB's rules, it would be inappropriate for the board to comment publicly on the firm's position with respect to an inspection demand. And I certainly agree with that's fine. There's a strong implication there, I guess, that if a firm is on the list, it will have received an inspection demand, and on some basis, legitimate or otherwise, declined to cooperate in the inspection. Is that a fair assumption for the readers of the list?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption. I mean, there are possibilities or other reasons why the PCAOB might not be able to complete an inspection within the time frame. You know, for instance, there could be, you know, since we have firms registered from 87 jurisdictions around the world, it's possible there could be a security concern, personal security concern, that would prevent the PCAOB from sending its inspectors to a certain country and therefore prevent that inspection from being done on time. So I suppose it's possible in the future that there would be a logistics problem in getting the inspections done. And the list is not technically limited to non-U.S. firms. So, you know, if there was a U.S. firm that wasn't conducted on time, then that firm could be listed. So the list is really about just providing transparency that these firms were supposed to have been inspected within 4 years of the date where they issued an audit report after being registered with the board, and they weren't.
I guess, as I understand, if we were to publish the first list today, I guess the 49 firms we're talking about here would be on that list, although they've not all, I guess not any, some have, but most haven't received inspection demands.
Technically, if you publish the list today, the list of firms that were deferred from 2008 to 2009 would be on the list, except for the three that have been inspected, four by the end of July. That will have been inspected. And so I wouldn't include the 49 on the list, because technically, you know, you can't say for sure that those firms have not been inspected by the end of the calendar year until the end of the calendar year. So at the end of this year, the firms in that pool that aren't inspected would be included on that list.
When are we going to publish the first list?
I had envisioned we would publish the first list in July.
And it will be, I've got to make sure I put it. It will be then as of July 1st, or would have been the list that we would have published on January 1st had this all been?
been in place.
I would think we would make it accurate and make it as of whatever date in July it's published.
Just one last thing, and I guess kind of transcends this proposal. I'm very much in favor of these lists and this kind of window into foreign inspection that we're talking about here. I think a lot of these issues would also be addressed, or at least would appear in a broader context, if we had a system where there was a web page or some access on our website to a page for every registered firm, where you could see when it was registered, whether it had been inspected, linked to its inspection report, other information about the firm. There's certainly been discussion over time internally about doing that. Is there some hope that we'll see a comprehensive system like that anytime soon?
I believe there is. It's my understanding that all of those things that you just mentioned are planned for the board's website and should be up and running sometime later this year in connection with the special and annual reporting system.
Hopefully that'll be in a way then that we'll let people do their own sorts if they want to see firms that registered before X date and haven't had an inspection, had their inspection in a certain year. They could devise sort of their own free-form searches to come up with lists of firms.
That's my understanding, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much. As I've indicated, I do support this proposal, although in some ways I wish we didn't have to do it, but I think it's the right way to go from where we are. Thank you.
Charlie. Thanks, Mark. Well, it's already been said, this is certainly a challenging rulemaking. Paramount concern is to protect the interests of investors and U.S. securities. And, you know, it is difficult to argue that delaying inspections could do so. Yet that's exactly what we're considering today. The board's action today should signal an unwavering willingness to work with our counterparts in appropriate ways to enhance investor protection. But the purpose of these relationships must be to facilitate our inspection mandate, not avoid it. I have supported achieving our mandate through cooperative arrangements, and I continue to do so as a way to avoid unnecessary conflicts. But avoidance of conflict cannot mean avoidance of inspection. I support the board's action today because, as I expressed at the open meeting on the proposal, we still have much work to do to build our non-U.S. inspections program. I'd like to say that we can complete all required inspections with the highest quality, but the reality is that deferring an inspection may allow us to do a better inspection in the end. Until recently, our Office of Research and Analysis has had limited involvement in non-U.S. inspections. Indeed, risk assessment is particularly important in these inspections, given that many of the firms are quite large, and yet our window into them is limited to simply a small number of audits. Our inspections also need to focus on the substantial risk that referred work presents on multinational audits. In that regard, I'm disappointed that, as the release points out, we don't today have sufficient information on referred work to take much work into account in prioritizing the inspections this year. This should change. Indeed, in some situations, referred work on a large multinational audit may dwarf a firm's other U.S. issuer work. In addition, many registered non-U.S. firms are members of global networks and rely on regional quality control functions. We need a strategy to evaluate those quality control functions in the context of local non-U.S. inspections, and the additional time should allow us to develop one that is both effective and likely efficient as well. Also, as others have noted, while fieldwork on 140 non-U.S. inspections has substantially been performed, most of those inspections have not yet resulted in inspection reports. The additional time should allow inspectors to evaluate our evidence from those inspections, prepare reports, and bring lessons learned from them to bear in future inspections. Finally, I support the transparency initiatives that the board is announcing today. In addition to providing investors information about the status of the firm's inspections, they enhance the board's accountability to the public for maintaining its non-U.S. inspection program. I'm certainly appreciative of the many thoughtful comments that we received on this proposal, and I also would like to thank the hard work of the many staff who worked on this initiative, as well as the important transparency initiatives that we are announcing today. Thank you very much.
Bill.
Mr. Chairman, I also want to join in indicating my support for this proposal and my appreciation, deep appreciation for all the hard work that the staff has put into it. Today's approval of this rule highlights the importance of identifying just what the barriers are to our inspections in certain countries. One such factor is that under Sarbanes-Oxley, the board cannot share inspection information with non-U.S. jurisdictions. It's understandable that while the board can share such information with certain federal and state bodies, the Congress did not include non-U.S. counterparts of the PCAOB, since very few such organizations even existed back in 2002 when that legislation was approved by the Congress. It's my hope that the Congress will give serious consideration to permitting such sharing of information, since that may facilitate developing cooperative arrangements in certain countries where we cannot do so today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the adoption of the rule amendment before us today. Last December, with some reluctance, I voted along with my fellow board members to propose an amendment to Rule 4003 to give the board the ability to postpone certain inspections of foreign registered public accounting firms for up to 3 years. I stated then, as I do now, that it is a difficult call to make when considering whether extending the deadlines for certain international inspections is consistent with the Sarbanes-Oxley Act's imperative to protect investors. The choice the board faced was clearly stated in the release, namely to, one, postpone certain inspections of foreign registered public accounting firms while continuing discussions with firms or jurisdictions in an attempt to resolve outstanding issues, or, two, proceed with inspections by making inspection demands on individual firms over the likely objection of a number of local authorities. Comments the board received from investor representatives varied in terms of the level of support. Examples included the following. Jeff Mahoney from the Council of Institutional Investors wrote, quote, "We obviously have great concern with the proposal to allow the board to postpone for up to 3 years the first inspection of any non-U.S. firm," close quote. He further stated, quote, "Our support for this proposal is contingent on the final rule, including at a minimum certain conditions to ensure that the quality of the board's inspections of U.S. and non-U.S. registered firms becomes better and more responsive to the needs of investors going forward," close quote. Mary Morris from the California Public Employees Retirement System wrote, quote, "Although CalPERS supports the amendment's extended timetables, it does so with reservations and strongly believes that the board should maintain on its website an up-to-date list of all registered firms that have not yet had their first inspection and the reason why," close quote. And Barbara Roper from the Consumer Federation of America offered, quote, "reluctant and conditional support for the proposal to delay for up to 3 years first inspections of some foreign audit firms, provided that the proposed inspection delay is conditioned on certain factors." It is clear from these comments and others that representatives of investors believe that greater transparency about those jurisdictions and firms that have yet to be inspected is essential given the delays. Investor representatives also believe that delays should be used to improve, where possible, the overall international inspection process, and that any further inspection delays beyond this three-year extension would be unacceptable. I agree with these investor group comments. Vital to the final rule we are about to vote on today are the transparency initiatives it includes. More specifically, as has been discussed, at the beginning of each year and until 2012, the board will list on its website all non-U.S. jurisdictions in which firms are scheduled to be inspected by the PCAOB during that year. Further, the board will not remove a jurisdiction from the list without publicly explaining why the schedule has changed for that jurisdiction. The board will post on its website a list of all registered firms that have not yet had their first PCAOB inspection, even though more than 4 years have passed since they first issued an audit report while registered with the board. Further, the board will update this list in January and July of each year. In addition, the board will retain the policy it announced last December to post on its website a list of non-U.S. jurisdictions in which the PCAOB has already conducted inspections. And finally, the board intends to report biannually on its progress in meeting the scheduling thresholds described in the release. These disclosures will provide crucial and timely information to investors as they consider their investment strategies and risk tolerances. I am confident that the board will make every effort to use this inspection delay to continue its efforts to advance its coordination and cooperation with local authorities. I also fully expect that the additional time will provide the board with an opportunity to enhance our international inspection program in other ways. Borrowing from the comment letter of Jack Silzinski, the publisher of the Analyst Accounting Observer, quote, the inspections are critical, and so is their proper execution. Therefore, I support the extended timetable so that the inspections are done with due care and diligence, close quote. I want to make one further point on the broader issue of transparency. I do not want to lose sight of other issues before us to improve disclosures about the board's activities with respect to firm's inspection and remediation efforts. As I have stated before, at the board's open meeting on December 4th, I believe that the board should prominently disclose on its website those firms that have failed to remediate quality control concerns identified in our inspection reports within a 12-month time frame. I also think it is extremely important to clearly identify on our website, as I mentioned before, those firms that have been inspected by the PCAOB and those that have not. For example, I doubt that many investors realize that while the PCAOB has a little over 2,000 registered firms, we only inspect about half of those firms, a little over 1,000. This is because registered firms that have not issued audit opinions for public companies during any of the previous 3 years are not inspected by the PCAOB, even though they may have issued audit opinions for their non-public clients. I look forward to working with you, Mr. Chairman, on these initiatives and completing our deliberations on them as soon as possible so that investors will have readily available access to this information. I know how much hard work was put into this release by Rhonda Schneer and her team in the International Affairs, Michael Stevenson in the General Counsel's Office, and Carl Callender in Inspections. I commend them for their efforts. And finally, Mr. Chairman, I would be remiss if I did not recognize your leadership in achieving today's positive outcome.
Thank you very much.
And I've got two observations. One, I totally share Bill Gratison's point that to the extent possible, we move as expeditious as we can and encourage the Congress to move, as I think we all are, inspection information reports with our counterparts throughout the world. And then, George, I wish you would very briefly describe the role that our Office of Research and Analysis plays in helping your office prioritize our international inspections.
Well, in the area of international, we've had there's not a lot of information that the type of information that you have domestically in terms of evaluating risk. I mean, a lot of these companies, once you get in foreign jurisdictions, you don't have the kind of tracking that you have by analysts in the United States. So this is in evaluating risks, particularly when you factor in cultural risks and differences in the way countries conduct their business. Once you get off of U.S. soil, is extremely difficult. So I'm saying inspections and also RAA are in the beginning of this process. And we've been meeting with the ORA in an effort to try to figure out how best we can accomplish the objective of evaluating risk. As Dan mentioned, one area is the global networks of the major firms and how the global networks evaluate risks in connection with their inspection processes they conduct across the world, and we're trying to evaluate how we can better obtain cooperation with respect to these global networks and how the global networks of the big four firms evaluate risk. Also, we're in working with ORA, they have identified a certain third-party databases that provide information that evaluate risk. It's not as good as what you would typically find in the United States, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. I'll tell you what else we're doing. We're taking the people that we have internally, and we have people that speak, I thought at last it was like 26 different languages that have lived in these countries, that have conducted audits in some of these countries. And what we started to do internally is to go to those people and ask those people to give us the the benefits of the knowledge they gained in connection with the careers they had before they came here and operating in these countries. In other words, if you want to identify the risks associated with a foreign connection with a foreign affiliate, you got to start with how the business is conducted in that particular country. And so we're using our internal knowledge and trying to use that to leverage our ability to evaluate risk internally. So it's work with the ORA. It's what we're doing internally. It's what we're looking at in the future with respect to how we're going to deal with these and obtain cooperations from these foreign affiliate and global networks of the major firms, in particular with the Big Six accounting firms.
And finally, do you feel that you have the necessary staff and resources to accomplish our international inspections agenda?
Yes, yes. We have some of the most talented people that I've ever worked with. You can pit the people that we have in inspections and the people that we have in our domestic large firm and small firm program against anybody out there and against any regulatory agency, quasi-regulatory agency anywhere. They're the best, and they're the most qualified. I mean, we have people that were ex-partners at the firms. We have upwards of 25 years of experience coming in the door. I mean, our least experienced people we've hired as managers and have between 13 and 14 years of experience. These are without any qualification, the best that you're going to find. And they can do the job, and they will.
I'd like to add to that just a little bit. Our original budget for 2009 provided for 111 non-U.S. inspections, and pursuant to the revisions of this inspection frequency requirement of Rule 4003, the revised estimate for 2009 does include all of those inspections that are required pursuant to the changes to the inspection frequency. But as everybody knows, I believe here, is that over the last several months, we have continued to refine our risks associated with our non-U.S. inspections. And we have begun to take a variety of steps to strengthen our inspections program, and expect that those enhancements will continue into 2010. The amendments to the inspections frequency requirement provide a degree of flexibility to increase the scope on the inspections that we're conducting this year. However, we are, as we continue to look at the refinements to the non-U.S. inspections program, we are continuing to also reassess what is the right balance in terms of the resources that are needed for non-U.S. inspections as we continue to go out and do those inspections in 2009 and beyond 2010.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. If there's no further discussion, I'll put the question to the board. All those in favor of approving the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and the motion is carried. There's no further business. This concludes our agenda today. The meeting is now adjourned. We will rise from the open meeting and reconvene the closed board meeting at 10:35.